The question was asked, there seems to be inequality in the way the Torah set up divorce, in that a husband seems to be in control of initiating divorce, and a wife seems to be at the husband's, at his will. It's up to him. So that's the way it would seem when we open the Torah. And I want to address the question, but in a slightly broader sense. So let's begin. I have a question for all the guys here. Have you ever cleared the table, taken things to the fridge, opened the fridge, only to realize there's no place to put the stuff back on the table, went back to rearrange the fridge, and then put the stuff into the fridge?
Yes.
Yeah,
doesn't that happen to you often, like every time you're going to put stuff into the fridge? How often, let's ask differently, how often do you go to the fridge before you take the stuff off the table and check that there's room? I mean, you have a watermelon, right? You know it needs space. How often do you actually go to the fridge and clear the space before you take the watermelon off the table?
Like every time.
Yeah? Seriously?
Yeah.
Okay, but you see you're in the minority here, okay? Most men don't do that. Most men walk to the fridge with the watermelon, open the fridge, look and see there's no room, are very surprised, walk back, put back down the watermelon, go and rearrange the fridge, bring the watermelon, put it in. And they're going to do this every Shabbos. You know, they could do it week after week and they don't notice. Most women would not. Most women, when they have to take a watermelon and put it in the fridge, they're going to look at you and wonder what a dunce. Like, why doesn't he realize he needs to go and arrange room in the fridge? But that's because we think differently. Women have what's called Bina Yesera. They have understanding. They see beyond the facts. We see, I have watermelon, needs to go in the fridge. Okay, take watermelon, go to the fridge. Open fridge, realize there's no room, put watermelon back. Go, set up room, now go bring watermelon into the fridge. Most women, they ain't taking the watermelon off the table before they have room in the fridge. Again, it's a generalization, so it's not 100% accurate. But most men are like this, and most women are like that. So the Torah teaches us, and then Chazal elaborate, that there are strengths that men have, and there are strengths that women have. One of women's strengths is their insight. Women have strengths in their patience. Women have strengths in their capacity for long-term relationships. If a man had to carry a baby around for 9 months, I don't know if any children would be born. A woman has that patience to nourish, to grow, to feed. Bearing a child is very painful. It's difficult. It has hardships. Giving birth to a child is painful and has hardships. And then nursing a child and raising a child, these are all difficult things. And there's a reason why there are so many deadbeat dads. There are so many dads who just leave and don't take care of their kids or take care from afar. And it's so understood that the mother is there and dedicated. And we all know that there's a special relationship with a mother, and there's a special care and concern and patience that a mother has. Some have more, some have less, but in general, we have different strengths, we have different weaknesses. That's a given, right? Anyone who looks at the world sees that. There's, within that, women also have weaknesses, meaning we just described some of their strengths, but part of women's weaknesses are their emotions. It's a strength, it's a weakness. A woman can sometimes get very excited, and a woman can sometimes react emotionally, where a man will have an easier time being logical and cold-hearted and think things through. So women have strengths that men don't have. Men have strengths that women don't have. It's not right to look at the world and say equality means we're homogeneous. We're not. We're different. We look to treat each one well in accordance with their strengths and weaknesses. But you can't say equality means give an old person who's losing his eyesight, give him a driver's license. Equality. But he can't see well. It's dangerous, right? In his state, equality means I give him in accordance with his strengths and weaknesses. Maybe in his state, it means I give him public transportation for a cheaper rate. Maybe that's equality. Equality doesn't mean I treat everyone the same way. Equality means I care for everyone and I deal with each person in accordance with their needs. So far, you guys with me? Okay. If there's limited funds in the budget, and there are male orphans and female orphans, comes the halacha and says, take care of the female orphans and send the male orphans out to collect. We value the honor of the women, and we say the girls will take the funds, and the boys will have to go out and figure out a way of fending for themselves. If the public has a way of supporting them, they'll support them. If the public has a way of employing them, they'll employ them. But at the end of the day, we protect the girls, and we demand more of the boys. Within a marriage, if there are limited funds, and the husband and the wife need a new garment equally, so then the wife gets the new garment. There are many instances where the halacha takes many steps forward to protect the woman. Now, when we speak about divorce, so we have to understand, where does divorce take place? It's not in a vacuum. It's not like husband and wife are sitting at home alone, and the husband decides, I don't like you anymore. You are hereby divorced. Goodbye. And the wife can't do that. She can't write on her own little piece of paper and say, you are divorced. Goodbye. That's not what we're talking about. Divorce takes place in court, right? The husband comes to court. The wife comes to court. They make their claims. And then the court decides what happens. So the halacha did set up a certain structure. I think the simplest understanding is that the halacha did not want a woman to initiate divorce as easily, even though a woman could. Because the halacha knew that she might go off the handle and initiate it when she might better regret it. She can initiate divorce just like the guy. I'm saying, you know, just like he goes to court, she can go to court. The difference is that the Torah demanded that he do it of his own volition. And by her, there's an element where he can do it and she doesn't have to agree. But you know what? Halachically, she has to agree too. I'm saying the halacha is that he can't give her a get against her will. And then the halacha is also that if she has proper legal grounds for asking for a divorce, then the courts will force him to give her a divorce. It's true that technically the way they will force him is that they'll beat him up until he gives a divorce. But practically, what's the big difference? I'm saying both can go to a court. Both can demand. And both will have to support their case. And if they're case is legitimate, then the courts will back them and see that it happens. So there's a technical difference in the level of desire that's necessary. Meaning, on the contrary, you see that the courts will never beat up a woman and say, agree to accept the get. That we don't do. We will beat up a man to ensure that he agrees to give the get. So I'm saying these halachos, I feel, are very often taken out of context, where people look at a specific aspect of a doraisa without seeing the broad picture. And if someone comes and asks me, well, then why did the Torah set it up? You know, I said something, but it's contingent on Acherim Drabbeinu Gershom. It's contingent on Dinim Drabbanon. That's true, but if you look at the Torah and you assume the Torah meant to be observed in a way that's just without the rabbinic institutions, that's wrong. The rabbis basically look through the Torah to understand what the Torah wanted of us and said wherever humanity won't live up to it without our setting up these institutions. So we set it up to get back to the Torah way of life, not to invent a new way of life. So if Chazal say, we'll beat him up until he gives the get because she's legitimate in asking for the get, so then it's not that they invented a new concept. We'll beat him up until he gives the get. They're taking a concept which they saw within the Torah that under circumstance A, B, C, or D, it's legitimate for her to want a divorce, and then they will force her to take it, force him to give it. I'm saying the difference is when you look at it from afar, sometimes it can seem extreme. When you look at it up close, you suddenly realize it's not such a big difference.
Why do we even allow the possibility, or let me rephrase it, is it that we allow the possibility that it can come to that we have to beat up a guy in order to force him to give a divorce, because we don't want to make it so easy?
That was the second part of the question. They try to eliminate the guna and that for today. Some people are, you saying, has to be analyzed carefully.
Well, that's more right, the question of whether should we institute a penalty on someone who would refuse to give a divorce. I mean, beating him up is also pressure. But I'm saying on either side, on the guy or the girl. But I'm saying, why set up the framework so that we have to apply pressure? And I'm suggesting, based on what I'm hearing, because we don't want to make it easy, for instance, like for a woman to just lose control and say, I want a divorce, and then should be on her own. Or the man to say, if I got angry and I'm giving a divorce.
It's more apt that the woman will say that.
Is that mainly the point? We don't want to make it so easy.
It's one of the points. There are other points.
Because then we avoid the whole circus.
Right, but if you think about it, I'll tell you an interesting story. Approximately 100 years ago. Okay? You want the full story? It's a long story. You want the punchline? I can tell you the punchline.
Full story.
The full story is an interesting story. Okay. So the full story begins about 130 years ago. There was a young man who fell in love with a young girl, and they decided to get engaged. And they come to the parents, and the girl's father sits down with the young man and says, "Young man, how do you plan on supporting my daughter?" So the young man says, "Well, I don't have anything yet, but I'm looking to go into business, and my family's been in business, and that's the direction I plan on taking." And the father said, "That's very nice, but those are dreams, and you're talking to me about a reality. You want to get married now?" "No." So the young man doesn't know what to do with it. The girl doesn't know what to do with it. She pleads with her father, and "No is no. Finished." This is Frankfurt, Germany, 130 years ago. And they break up, that couple. And he has to go his way, she goes her way. He gets married, she gets married. And 2 decades pass. 25, 30 years later, approximately 100 years ago, his son is dating a girl, and they fall in love, and they decide to get married. And when they go to meet the girl's parents, her mother is the very girl that his father wanted to marry so many years ago. So this young couple is fantastically in love. He was out working, he would send her letters, and she would go to the post office. In those days, once a week you got mail, and she would tremble as she'd go to the bathroom in the post office to read in privacy the letters that her husband sent her. And after a period, they got married, and she was the most dedicated wife you can imagine. Everything, she was at his side. He was everything to her. He was her whole life. She was the most dedicated wife a person can imagine. He developed a business. There was a point where the food he was selling had worms, and they stood there picking the worms out of the food. And she stood there all night picking worms out of food. I don't know if you guys can imagine what it means for the woman to stand with her husband picking worms out of food so that they could sell it the next morning. That anything and everything he did, she was with him. To the point where when he died, she said, "I don't want to live anymore." She made a declaration, "I don't have a life without him. If he's gone, I have no reason to live." And that's how she lived the next 8 years until she finally died. She didn't want to live. Nothing you could do or tell this woman would budge her. Approximately 30 years before she died, while her husband was still alive, and she was still the same dedicated wife, she once said to one of her sons, she said, "You should know, you're my blood relative, and your father is a stranger." What did she mean? She meant, as much as we're connected, your father, at any day, could divorce me. They'd already lived half a century together. But she knew that that connection was not the same as her son. She was telling her son, you should know, you're my blood. You're my flesh and blood. That's never going to change. And your father, at the end of the day, is not. Okay? This is from probably the most dedicated woman I ever saw. I don't know, you know. She was like, you're talking about she'd get up at 4 in the morning to milk the cows for her husband and stuff like, then stage after stage. But she said, you know, within marriage, there's always that knowledge that at the end of the day, this isn't my blood relative. At the end of the day, there's always that potential for divorce. You know it. You don't say it. You shouldn't be thinking about it. It shouldn't be spoken about. It shouldn't be in the air. But at the end of the day, you know it's there. What do you think it would be like if divorce were merely a matter of I want it, you're going to give it?
Look at secular society today. That's pretty much it.
A guy came to me yesterday. He said to me, I got married 4 months ago. Okay, story from yesterday. He said, at the same time, three cousins got married. Today, 3 months later, all three are divorced. What does that tell us? I'm saying, and where does marriage go when you make it so easy? The Torah says no. Things are more difficult. You can't just demand a divorce. And I can tell you that what I've seen many times where it did play itself out that way. Where very often the woman was pushed by her family. You don't have to put up with this. This isn't the guy for you. And now that you know all this, don't live with it. And she went off the handle. And she said, forget it. No way. Even in the stories he told me yesterday, but, you know, that doesn't prove anything. Chazal said, we want a certain break system. It's going to have to go to court. She can't just demand a get. There has to be good cause in for it to be good for her. He can't just demand the get. There has to be good cause that it's for him. And even after everything's been discussed and decided, the halacha says we write a get, we write a line, we sew it up. We write another line, we sew it up. We go slowly, slowly. Why? Because maybe he'll change his mind. We try to keep it slow. And Chazal said for Kohanim, we try to make it even slower. Because Kohanim have a temper. So for Kahanim, and Kahanim could never remarry her. So there was an aspect of, let's put the brakes on things. It's in everyone's interest. The system, so the system has its reasons. I gave one, but there are more. If you think about it, the idea that, there's a lot more to be said. I think whenever you're looking for the reasoning behind the Torah, the more you understand the world and the systems of the world, the more you understand the logic of the Torah. I think there's a lot to be said, but it would take too many introductions. Meaning I gave an introduction and an explanation in one direction. There's a lot more to be said about the type of relationship that should be between a husband and wife, which is reflected in this too. Meaning there's a lot about the dedication that should be there and the faithfulness that should be there. And don't forget the verse that the prophet says, which the Gemara says is to be understood literally too. The Navi describes Ki Hashem he'id bencha uven eshet ne'urecha. God testifies between you and the woman you married in your youth. Asher ata begadta ba. You were a traitor to her. Vehi chavertecha v'eshet britcha. Whereas she was your best friend. She was the woman of your covenant. So there's a certain faithfulness that the Torah demands of the husband towards his wife. Meaning it's built in for the wife towards the husband, and then the husband has to show it towards the wife in the other way. But again, that deserves a much, much broader, it deserves like a series. Early in the year, I gave a series on this in Hebrew, but it deserves a long discussion. Yeah, have the relationship. Rav Eliyahu Kitov has a piece on that also. On the importance of the potential of divorce, that potential also brings a certain life to the marriage, and the importance of knowing to leave that potential out, and why the Torah set it up like this. Okay, this is one direction of thought, but there's much more to be said.